All right, so welcome back, everyone, for another deep dive. And today we are tackling a character from An Inspector Calls that tends to be a bit of a head-scratcher, especially for students. Eric Burling.
Yeah, he's a tricky one.
He's not always the most likable guy in the play. But trust me, he is absolutely crucial to understanding what
Absolutely.
Priestley's trying to do with this whole play. So to help us unpack all of that, we have, as always, our expert. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Always happy to delve into the dark world of the Burlings.
Eric Burling. He's a bit of a puzzle, isn't he?
He is, yeah, a puzzle wrapped in an enigma. Even from, like you said, even from that first little snippet of description that Priestley gives us, early 20s, not quite at ease, half shy, half assertive.
Right.
What are we supposed to do with that?
It's like Priestley is setting us up for a character full of contradictions.
Oh, absolutely. Contradictions from the get-go.
Right from the start. So, what do you think Priestley's hinting at with that description? And how does it tie into this idea of Eric as like a construct, right? That Priestley is using to make a point.
Well, I think right away it's like he's this bundle of opposing forces, isn't he? I mean, he's young, but he's also part of this established, wealthy family. He's shy, but he's also assertive. So you get the sense that he's sort of struggling with himself a little bit. He's not quite comfortable in his own skin, which I think makes us wonder about his place, his role in this seemingly perfect family.
Okay, so we should be paying attention to those little details, those little stage directions, those little descriptions,
Oh,
because
absolutely.
they might hold bigger clues about what Priestley's trying to say.
Absolutely. They're so important. Those tiny little details are often actually the most significant because remember, An Inspector Calls is all about appearances versus reality. And Eric, I think, really embodies that contrast, doesn't he? Because, he's trying to figure out who he is within this family, within this society. And that makes him a very interesting character to sort of pick apart.
Yeah, and that struggle, I think, is really highlighted in his interactions with his father, right? When it comes to Mr. Burling's, business practices and his whole capitalist worldview.
Absolutely. That's a great point. Think about when Eric says, "Why shouldn't they try for higher wages? You know, we try for the highest possible prices." He's directly challenging his father there. He's showing this sense of social conscience that we just don't see in the older generation.
It's like he's the voice of dissent.
Absolutely.
The one who's willing to question the status quo. But does that make him the good guy of the play?
Well, I'd be very careful about putting any character in this play into those very neat boxes of good and bad.
Yeah, it's not that simple.
It's not that simple. It's much more nuanced than that. Priestley is much more interested in the gray areas of human nature. And I think we see that in Eric in a really fascinating way, particularly in his relationship with Eva Smith.
Yeah, and that's where things get really interesting, right? Because Priestley doesn't explicitly tell us what happened between Eric and Eva. He uses those very deliberate euphemisms and leaves a lot of room for interpretation, like what did happen.
And those phrases like, that's when it happened, or, in that state where a chap easily turns nasty.
Right. What does that mean?
They create this sense of unease, don't they? This sense that something's not quite right. Something's being hidden. And for students, this is where those close reading skills come in. You have to read between the lines, You have to pay attention to those subtle hints that Priestley's giving us and think about the context.
So we're talking about looking at the language, like analyzing it for those clues that Priestley's embedded in the text. But we also have to think about the historical context.
Oh, absolutely. We can't just look at this play as this sort of standalone story. It's very much a product of its time.
Right.
So we have to think about what was happening in 1912 when this play was set.
The social norm,
The
is it?
social norms, the social issues that Priestley was grappling with, and how all of that might be shaping his portrayal of these characters, particularly Eric.
And for students, I mean, that means doing a bit of historical research, right? Like understanding the context of the play can really unlock those deeper layers of meaning.
Absolutely. I mean, knowing about the social and political climate of the time can really shed light on why Priestley might have chosen to depict Eric in this particular way.
Okay, so we've established that Eric's complex, full of contradictions. He challenges his father's capitalist views, but he's also implicated in something deeply troubling with Eva Smith. And Priestley's leaving us with more questions than answers. So, where do we go from here? Like, how do we start to unravel this character and understand his significance in the play?
Well, I think a good place to start is to look at how Eric reacts after Eva's death.
Right.
Does he take responsibility for his actions, or does he try to shift the blame?
Okay, that's a good point.
Yeah. And I think that's something we'll pick up in part two.
Yeah, let's dig into that in part two.
Definitely. So we were talking about Eric's reaction to Eva Smith's death.
Yeah.
And how that's when Priestley really starts to, like, you know, expose those cracks in his character.
Yeah, yeah.
And forces us to ask those questions.
So what stands out to you the most in terms of how Eric responds when the inspector lays it all out?
Right.
Like, is he really remorseful? Or is there something else going on?
Yeah, that's the question, isn't it? I mean, on the surface, he seems genuinely shaken by Eva's death. He even admits to his involvement, you know? He says things like, I was in that state when a chap easily turns nasty.
Right, right.
But I think if we dig a little deeper into his language, his behavior, a more complicated picture emerges.
Okay, so this kind of ties back to what we were talking about before with the euphemisms, right?
Yes, exactly.
Like how Priestley uses language to both reveal and conceal at the same time.
Exactly. And notice how Eric uses that word chap.
Yeah.
It's almost as if he's trying to distance himself from his actions to make it seem like what happened was somehow out of his control.
Right.
Like any chap might have done the same thing in that situation.
Hmm. So he's trying to downplay his responsibility.
Yeah, just his.
To make excuses for his behavior.
Like, exactly. And that, I think, raises a really important question for us as readers, which is Eric really capable of understanding the gravity of what he's done?
Right.
Is he willing to accept responsibility for the consequences of his choices?
Yeah.
Or is he still trapped in that mindset of privilege, you know, thinking that he's somehow above the rules?
Okay, so is this where the idea of Eric as like a construct, like Priestley using him to represent like a certain type of young man from a wealthy background?
Absolutely.
Who's never really had to face any consequences.
Exactly. And I think we see that play out in the way he interacts with the other characters, especially his outbursts at his mother when he screams, "Then you killed her and the child. She'd have had two, my child, your own grandchild. You killed them both. Damn you. Damn you."
Yeah, that's intense.
It is.
He's really lashing out.
He is.
Blaming everyone but himself.
Exactly. And I think that outburst reveals a lot about Eric's character. Yeah. I mean, on the one hand, it shows his anger, his frustration, you know, his sense of injustice.
Right.
But on the other hand, it also highlights his tendency to deflect blame. To find scapegoats rather than actually confronting his own guilt.
So we're seeing this, like, internal conflict within Eric.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, he is capable of feeling remorse.
Yes.
But he's also very quick to point the finger at others.
He is, yeah.
It's like he's caught in this web of, like, privilege and denial.
Exactly. And this is where I think Priestley's social commentary comes into play.
Okay.
Because Eric becomes a symbol of that privileged class, you know,
right.
The people who benefit from the existing social order, but they just don't seem to acknowledge the suffering that it causes.
Hmm. It's like he represents this whole segment of society that's just blind to the consequences of their actions.
Yeah.
Like a generation that's inherited wealth and power, but hasn't really earned it or even learned how to use it responsibly.
Absolutely. That's a really good point. And it's that lack of awareness, that inability to see beyond his own limited perspective, that I think makes Eric such a tragic figure. Because he does have the potential for good, you know, we see that in those moments of empathy and remorse.
Yeah.
But he's ultimately trapped by his upbringing and his social conditioning.
So while Eric might seem like this mess of contradictions, he's actually a really carefully constructed character.
Absolutely, he is.
Like, Priestley is using him very deliberately to make a point about social responsibility, about the dangers of privilege, and about the need for individual accountability.
Exactly. And it's in these moments of conflict, these clashes between Eric's conscience and his social conditioning, that Priestley's message really resonates.
Okay, so we've unpacked Eric's reaction to Eva's death.
Yeah.
We've talked about this tendency to shift blame.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's another key relationship here that really sheds light on Eric's character.
Yeah.
And that's his connection with his father, Mr. Burling.
Yes.
So let's shift gears and talk about that dynamic in a little more detail. We've been talking about Eric as this complex character, right? And how he kind of embodies a lot of what Priestley was trying to critique about society at the time. And one relationship that I think really highlights all those tensions is the one
Absolutely.
between Eric and his father, Mr. Burling.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, you could almost say that their dynamic is like this little microcosm of
Right.
the bigger clash that's happening
Yeah.
between the old generation and the new, you
Right.
know, between those clinging to traditional values
Yeah.
and those who are starting to question things.
So how does Priestley use this father-son relationship to make a larger point about these changing times, right? And the
Yeah.
need for social reform?
Well, if you think about Mr. Burling for a minute,
Okay.
he's like the poster child for the self-made capitalist,
Right.
right? A man who believes in hard work and self-reliance and, you know, pursuing profit above all else.
Yeah.
He's proud of his accomplishments, and he really doesn't see the need to apologize for his wealth or his social standing.
Like he is a product of his time,
Exactly.
right?
Yeah.
Embodying those prevailing social and
Yeah.
economic
Of
values.
the early 20th century,
Yeah.
yeah.
And Eric, as his son, is expected to follow in his footsteps, right?
Yeah.
Inherit the family business
Right.
and keep that whole worldview going. What we see in the play is that Eric isn't so sure about his father's values anymore.
He's starting to question
Yeah.
the morality of
Right.
all of that, you
Yeah.
know, that idea that some people are just destined to suffer while others prosper.
Right. And that's where the conflict really comes in,
Absolutely.
right? Like Eric questioning his father's values
Yes.
is a direct challenge to his authority. And that does not sit well
Not at all.
with Mr. Burling. Think
No.
about that moment when Eric defends the workers, right,
Oh, yeah.
to higher wages.
Yeah.
Mr. Burling just dismisses him completely, right?
Absolutely.
Calls him a young fool,
Yeah.
tells him to learn the facts of life.
You know his place.
Yeah, it's like Mr. Burling represents that rigid, unchanging social order.
Yes.
And then Eric represents the possibility of something new.
A more compassionate way of thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A more equitable way of thinking.
That's a great way to put it.
And I think it's through this clash of ideologies,
Yeah.
right, that
Yeah.
Priestley forces the audience to confront their own beliefs
Absolutely.
about, you know, social responsibility and
Yeah.
the role of the individual in society.
Yeah, because it makes you ask yourself, where do I stand on this? And I'm
Right.
more aligned with Mr. Burling's view or with Eric's?
So it's not
I see
just
it on them.
a personal squabble
Yeah,
between father
exactly.
and son.
Yeah, it represents a m much larger societal struggle.
Right. And that brings us back to the idea of Eric as a construct. Like he's not just this character in the play.
Right.
He's a symbol of
Yeah.
this whole generation grappling with change.
Absolutely.
This generation inheriting a world that's on the brink of transformation.
The world on the edge.
And I think
Yeah.
what's interesting is that while Eric's journey is messy,
Oh, yeah.
right, it's complicated.
It is. It's full of contradictions.
I think it's ultimately hopeful.
Yes, I agree with that.
Right. He represents that potential for growth, for change,
Yeah.
for a future where individuals actually take responsibility for their actions
Yes.
and work towards a more equitable society.
Absolutely. I think that's a really key point.
So I guess for students out there who are still kind of scratching their heads about Eric Burling,
Yeah.
just remember to pay close attention to those moments of conflict with his father.
Yeah.
Those scenes are not just about family drama.
No, not at all.
They're about a clash of values, a
Yeah.
clash of worldviews.
And ultimately a clash between the past and the future.
And they're a reminder that An Inspector Calls is a play that challenges us to think critically, right?
Absolutely.
To examine our own beliefs,
Yeah.
to consider the consequences of our actions, and to really work towards a world where social justice and individual responsibility aren't just these abstract ideas,
Right.
but lived realities.
I think that's a perfect way to sum it up.
Well, that's a wrap on our deep dive into Eric Burling from An Inspector Calls. Hope you guys enjoyed it. And until next time, keep exploring the power of literature to, you know, challenge us and make us think.